Well, it's commencement address season, right? It is that annual time of the year when in colleges and universities and high schools across the country, we hear about different commencement addresses. I just love searching through commencement addresses. On a side note, it's one of my favorite sort of pastimes to see. The New York Times always does an excerpt of 10 or 15 in their Sunday paper towards the end of May, and there's always different, you know, social media now, you can sort of figure out which ones are getting the buzz and all that stuff. And what I'm really looking for when I search for this is something that just knocks your socks off. Because, you know, a good commencement address, if you've been present at one or if you've read one, it does that. Because the rest of them, well, let's face it, are generally not very exciting, right? They're either a whole self-congratulatory lap, which I've been to one like that where the speaker's like, look at what I've accomplished to be here today. And so they're really just saying, look at how great I am today. Or it is just a purely exhortation on output. You know, go out and do, you can solve everything. You can just, you are super people. And you need to go out and be those super people. So in other words, we would hear that in terms of Christian language is that it's all just law, right? It's either sort of pride on the one hand of like, look at how I've made it to be your commencement address speaker. Or the second piece is you better go out and do a whole bunch of stuff. Now, be yourself. And then also solve poverty and invent a new battery and then have kids and donate time to charities and make lots of money and all this kind of exhortation, right? Just because if this school isn't hard enough, we're now going to tell you 700 things you need to be doing before you're 30, et cetera, right? That's what it is. They're just exhausting, in other words. They're just exhausting because they're just like grist for the hamster wheel of life, right? They're just more grist for that hamster wheel. Go out and do. But then every now and then, when that one breaks the mold, when it sort of cuts through the noise of a commencement address season, it's just, it's a revelation. I think it's a true gift from God in that sense. And the gold standard of what I'm thinking about here is a 2005 commencement address by David Foster Wallace, the now deceased writer. It's just an incredible writer, but he gave an address at Kenyon College in 2005 called This Is Water. I see a couple heads nodding that you've heard of it. And so those that have heard it, you're going to hear it again for just a little bit. It's an incredible, I commend the whole thing to you, full stop. But it begins with a parable. Wallace says, two fish in the water, swimming along, an older, wiser fish swims up to them and says, morning, boys. The fish look at him, and the older fish says, how's the water? The two fish swim off, and then they look at each other, and they say, what the hell's the water? And Wallace is going to say, the immediate point of the fish story is that the most obvious, ubiquitous, important realities are often the ones that are the hardest to see and talk about. Stated as an English sentence, Wallace says, of course, this is just a banal platitude. But the fact is that in the day-to-day trenches of adult existence, banal platitudes can have a life or death importance. So from this parable, he goes on to fully outline what he means by a day-to-day existence of an adult life. That you get up, your alarm goes off, and then you go to your high-paying job that you're trying to make even more money at, and then you get there early and stay late because you're just getting started. But by the time you stay too late, you realize there's nothing left in the refrigerator to eat when you get home. So you go to the grocery store where you run into everybody else that's been staying at their job too long, and they don't have any food. So now you have a whole grocery store full of hungry and tired people that just want to eat, and everybody's in line. Everybody's mad at each other. Right, it's an awful look of life that we all resonate with because we've all been out of college, right? We all know that the day in, day out, I pack three lunches every single morning for my kids. I do it so happily. No, but every single morning, you're packing the lunch, and then you're getting them off, and you're unpacking the bags, and you all have your routines that are like this, because that's life. And that's what Foster Wallace was getting at. He's like, this is what you're really getting ready to enter into, graduates. This brutal honesty. It's piercing. But he doesn't stop there. He says these long lines and these traffic jams provide us a chance for us to think about where we really are. And then he goes, and here's where the real trouble for humanity is. Because when we begin to think about where we are, when we look at that screaming baby in the checkout line, we begin to think that parent just needs to get that baby under control. Or that person that cut me off on the interstate needs to have their license revoked. In other words, when we begin to sort of be aware of our day in, day out existence, we realize that all of our experiences have one common denominator. They're all about us, right? It brings out our self-centeredness in our daily existence. Wallace says, we rarely talk about this sort of natural, basic self-centeredness because it's so socially repulsive. But it's pretty much the same for all of us deep down. It is our default setting, hardwired into our boards at birth. Think about it. There is no experience you've had that you are not at the absolute center of. Isn't that a great line? Now, of course, bracket here, in the world of theology, we, of course, do have language for this, and we talk about this as original sin. We talk about this as something that we've been touched with by birth. The birth defect of humanity is original sin. And here's where Wallace makes a deep pivot in this commencement address. He says, the choice, the awareness that you have, if you begin to really think about this day in, day out existence, is that you can imagine yourself. You have the actual freedom, occasionally, to break out of this self-centeredness rat hole. He goes on to say that imagine if you were in the checkout line and the screaming baby and the mom that it doesn't look like she has anything put together at all. Imagine for a second that she's on the fifth day of no sleep because her father is dying at home. Imagine for a second that the guy that cuts you off on the interstate is actually racing to watch the birth of his first child. In other words, if we begin to think, Wallace argues, to have a simple awareness of what is real and essential, so hidden in plain sight around us, if we just begin to be aware that maybe other people have things going on too. Maybe our neighbor is far more stressed out than we are, and that's why they didn't wave at us. Maybe the person that ran in front of us to get a table to eat dinner, it was the first time they had eaten all day. We never know, of course, what is going on inside of people's brains and hearts. But we do know that inside of our brains and inside of our hearts, many times there's a whole lot of judgment about what other people's motives are. And that's our default setting, right? That's not anything, unfortunately, that we can totally get rid of. If we could, then we wouldn't come to church. We'd all be perfect. But we can't get rid of that. But we can have an awareness of what's going on around us. We can have an acknowledgement, like those two fish that are swimming in the water, and they talk. The older fish said, "How's the water?" And those two fish said, "What the hell's he talking about? What's the water?" The idea is, of course, that if we just stopped and were aware of these surroundings, then we actually have freedom. Wallace says, there's all different kinds of freedom, and the kind that is the most precious, you'll not hear much talked about in the great outside world of winning and achieving and displaying. The really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness and discipline and effort, being able to truly care about other people and to sacrifice for them over and over in myriad petty little unsexy ways every day. Those little things that we do to love our neighbor, to put that into Christian theology. Just those little things of holding the door, or maybe delivering a plate of deviled eggs to a house, or helping someone move a box, or opening a car door for someone whose groceries are spilling everywhere and their kids are running out. Just those little things. So I could just keep talking about Wallace's commencement address, because it really is that good. I'm just sort of giving you a flyover of it. But the Christian gospel is so akin to that water imagery that Wallace starts, which is to say that the gospel is constantly blurred through our human existence, through both our sin and our to-do lists, our desire for control, which is all really a to-do list is the way to say, my life is organized and controlled. And I make to-do lists all the time. Okay, no, there's zero judgment here. But the reality is, it's just truth, right? We all make to-do lists because then I can go to sleep because everything's in a neat little box. And that never really works out that way, but we certainly do try every time we make a to-do list. So we blur the gospel. And this is why at St. Mark's and in every church you pray and hope that each week, the gospel is preached where there is no to-do lists, no exhortations, no demand, no law, only the good news that Jesus freed us from sin and death. So today the gospel is on full display in that short passage from John about the paralytic man at the pool. So for 38 years, this guy has longed to be healed. For 38 years. Anybody that's dealt with an affliction longer than a day, can you even imagine 38 years? Do you imagine wanting to be desired for something to be healed for that long? Some of us can. It may not be as outwardly and as visible as not having use of our arms or legs, but some of us want that thing to be resolved that's been broken in our lives for 38 years, maybe longer. So he's been waiting in these pools where the lame, the lost, the least, the outcasts, where everybody's sitting outside of the power structure hoping to be healed so they can re-enter society. Most of them have physical ailments, but we can take that metaphor very seriously and also acknowledge that many of them could have mental hurts and illnesses. And so this man has actually also been turned inward, if you notice that, because what does he say to Jesus? Jesus almost seems a little mean, right? He's like, are you waiting to get healed? The guy's like, I've been here for 38 years. Of course I am. But the problem is that there's rules to the pool. You can't just simply get in the pool anytime you want. There's certain times and prescriptions on how you do it. And this man clearly does not have hardly maybe any motor skills. And so you can imagine every morning when the hours to the pool open up and he's trying to get in, probably through some sort of crawl, everybody else runs in and he's left outside again. So his frustration must have just been incredible. But he's the microcosm of the rat race that Wallace is talking about just day in, day out existence, those lines at the grocery store. And he's indignant. He's despondent as he tells Jesus, well, of course I want to, but everybody else prevents me from doing it. But I can't. Well, Jesus just says a word of grace. It sounds like a command, but imagine the grace felt by this man when he says, stand up and take your mat. He heals him. Not within the structure of the law. And if you wanted to see a finer point on that, at the very end of the passage, what does it say this happened on the Sabbath? Whereas the gospel is being very clear, the gospel is being very clear to us that Jesus' healing powers, the freedom of the gospel comes outside of the law. Or as Paul says, apart from the law, we are made whole. So this man hears the good news that we get to hear, that he is set free, that the freedom of the gospel has been poured out for him and for you and for me. After all, the Hebrew for the pool of Bethesda, means the house of mercy. It means the house of mercy. The gospel is that we are all in the house of mercy, and that our burdens have been lifted, that we're actually free to love one another, free to do what Wallace suggests, which is to have an awareness of our friends and family around us and to show them empathy and compassion. We're free to do all those things because Jesus gave them all up for us. He loved us so that we can love others. In closing, back to another commencement address. And maybe you all saw this week, but it was just a brilliant slice of what Jesus does for us. And I'm talking about Robert F. Smith, who gave the commencement address at Morehouse College. He was a graduate of Morehouse College. And he announced in his commencement address that he was going to pay off the student debts of every graduating senior. Over $40 million. Wiped clean. A student said, "I heard this and I can delete that spreadsheet. I can delete the scorecard of life." I was so shocked. My heart dropped. My friends started texting their parents. Is this real? We started looking around at each other, not knowing what to do. And then all of a sudden, the whole row of us cried. We all cried. Student finished by saying, "In that moment, it was like the biggest burden in my life had been taken off my shoulders." That's the gospel. Amen.